Have you ever wanted to dive deeper into Scripture? If so, you're in luck, because every day there's a new Scripture reflection from the thoughtful staff at America Media, thinking through big questions together, like, what do Catholics believe about guardian angels? And what can Gen Zers take away from the Gospels? If you're already a subscriber, you can access these reflections in your email inbox or on our website. If you'd like to become a digital subscriber, it's easy to do. Just visit americamagazine.org/subscribe, and you'll have full access to America's Scripture Reflections.
Welcome to Inside the Vatican with America Media. Each week, veteran Vatican reporter Gerard O'Connell and I take you behind the headlines for an intergenerational conversation about the biggest stories out of the Vatican.
Breaking news out of the Vatican on this Palm Sunday. In a very unusual move, Pope Francis skipped reading his homily while presiding over Mass in St. Peter's Square this morning.
First up, it's Holy Week in the Vatican. We'll let you know what's planned and respond to reports on why Pope Francis skipped his homily at his Palm Sunday liturgy after he prepared one.
Well, a first resolution has been passed by the United Nations Security Council, which demands a ceasefire in Gaza.
The result of the voting is as follows. 14 votes in favor, 0 vote against, 1 abstention. The draft resolution has been adopted as Resolution 2728.
Then, Vatican Foreign Minister Archbishop Paul Gallagher has given Jerry a new interview covering the wars in Ukraine and Gaza, the current state of the Vatican-China question, and news about Pope Francis's upcoming trip to Asia. Finally, we'll update you on a recent meeting between the German bishops and Vatican officials about the controversial synodal way unfolding in the German church. I'm Colleen Deli. This is Inside the Vatican. Good morning from New Orleans, Jerry.
Good afternoon from a rainy Rome, Colleen. We had hope for sun, and now we've got some rain, and the temperature has dropped.
It feels appropriate for Holy Week to have rain.
I suppose so. There are very, very many tourists and pilgrims in Rome right now. Many young people, schools, colleges from all over the world have come. So it's you really get the sensation that something is happening in the city.
Jerry, we'll talk in a moment about exactly what's happening in the Vatican this week. But before we get into that story, we have a quick message from our sponsor. Do you want to be a master preacher? If so, Aquinas Institute of Theology's Doctor of Ministry in Preaching program will help you become the kind of preacher the Church so desperately needs today. Grounded in the charism of the Order of Preachers, the Aquinas program is the only Catholic program of its kind in the United States, and its graduates hold leadership roles in preaching and teaching throughout the world. The Aquinas cohort model is designed to accommodate a full-time minister's busy schedule, including both in-person and virtual components where students work together in a close-knit, supportive community. Applications are now being accepted for the 2024 cohort, which begins this summer. Visit ai.edu/dmin for more information. That's ai.edu/dmin. All right, Jerry. So on Sunday, Pope Francis, we know, had prepared a homily for his Palm Sunday liturgy, but he didn't end up reading it. Instead, after the gospel was read, which is the Passion reading, he opted for a few minutes of silence. And this led some to speculate that he was not feeling well again. Some of that came out in news reports. Can you speak to why he skipped the homily?
Well, first of all, the fact that he was not feeling well is not true. I spoke to people who saw him right before the ceremony and people who saw him after the ceremony, and I watched him drive around St. Peter's Square in the Pope Mobile for 20 minutes after the ceremony, smiling, waving, etc. So the Pope was quite well.
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago, when we know he was feeling unwell, he had difficulty even getting into the Pope Mobile, so definitely he was in better shape this time around.
He was in good shape, and that augurs well for the Holy Week. Mm-hmm. Which is quite a demanding period for any pope, and certainly for him at the age of 87.
So why do we think he skipped the homily?
I think it was a very definite decision by him. He was listening very attentively to the reading of the Passion, which we know takes quite a long time from the Gospel of Mark.
Mm-hmm. And people often skip homilies during this liturgy, we should say.
Yes, but he was kind of deeply immersed in the reading of the Passion. And although he had a homily prepared and we had received an advanced copy of it, normally if he doesn't feel up to reading the homily, he asks one of the Vatican officials to read it for him. This time, he did not read it himself, nor did he ask anyone else to read. Instead, there was a minute, 2 minutes of silence, which was much more eloquent. And I really feel, and I've seen many times in parishes, that after the reading of the Passion, people want to think rather than listen to a homily. And I think the Pope came to that conclusion himself. So I think it was a deliberate decision to let the reading of the Passion sink into the congregation. And there was real, real silence in the square. It was in St. Peter's Square.
It's a good thing that I was not there, because after the Passion reading, my toddler was very energetic.
Well, there were a few energetic kids around as well.
So our listeners are going to be hearing this on Holy Thursday. Let's go over Pope Francis's plans for Holy Week.
Well, he has an audience in St. Peter's Square tomorrow morning, Wednesday. That's the day before people hear this. On Holy Thursday morning in St. Peter's Basilica, he will preside at the Chrism Mass. That's where the Pope blesses the oils that will be used in the Diocese of Rome and in the Vatican for baptisms, confirmation, the ordination of priests, the blessing of the sick, and such like.
Mm-hmm. I know usually in most dioceses, the bishop celebrates this Mass and most of the priests of the diocese come. Is that the same in Rome?
This is the same in Rome, yes. The priests come and they're in the Basilica with the Pope on Holy Thursday morning. Then Holy Thursday afternoon at 4 o'clock, he goes to Rebibbia prison, which is the big prison on the outskirts of Rome, where Ali Agca, the man who attempted to assassinate John Paul II, was in prison for several years. But Francis went there in 2015. He went to the male sector of the prison, although there were some women there as well, when he celebrated the Mass of the Last Supper and washed the feet of the detainees. This time he's going to the women's sector of the prison. The Vatican statement says he will meet the women. Whether he actually will wash the feet, it remains to be seen, because he's now in a wheelchair, at least for some of the events he's in the wheelchair. So we have to see what exactly happens. But he's going to the prison. He has been to several prisons since he's been Pope, continuing a practice he had as Archbishop of Buenos Aires when he would go to prisons.
Did popes not usually go to prisons on Holy Thursday before him?
Here, the tradition in the Vatican was that the Pope celebrated the Holy Thursday Mass in St. Peter's or in St. John Lateran's Basilica. But Francis, from day one, much to the astonishment of people here, said, no, I'm going to prison. And he went to a juvenile prison on his first year as Pope. And except the period of the COVID, he's always gone out of the Vatican.
All right, so that's Holy Thursday. And then we get to Good Friday. I know usually there's a commemoration of the Passion, and then there's the Way of the Cross at the Colosseum in the evening. What are the Pope's plans?
Well, he will preside at the liturgy commemorating the Passion in St. Peter's Basilica. The Pope traditionally does not preach at that. And in fact, Cardinal Cantalamessa, the famous Franciscan preacher, who is now 90-something, will preach at this liturgy. In the evening, the Pope is scheduled to go to the Colosseum for the Way of the Cross. And we've learned just now, that he has actually written the meditations for the Way of the Cross at the Colosseum.
Usually these are written by different groups that are asked to do it. I think one year it was all written by kids. That was really powerful. So how unusual is it for a Pope to write them?
During Francis's pontificate, this is the first time that the Pope has written it. John Paul II wrote them one time. So it's not the practice for the Pope to do it. It's unusual. But whether Francis will actually go there is another question, because if the weather is like it is today, I would imagine his doctors would advise against it.
Jerry, this is a tradition to do this Way of the Cross at the Colosseum every Good Friday. Why do they do it there?
Well, because some of the early Christians died in the Colosseum, and so it's seen as one of the sites of martyrs in Rome. It's linked to that historical memory, and Francis always says, you know, we've got to keep the memory of our faith, and that is part of the memory of the faith.
How about Saturday? Is the Pope celebrating the Easter Vigil?
He's celebrating the Easter Vigil at 7:30 in the evening. I will be at it with the family. The Pope will give the homily. Whether he will baptize kids or confirm adults, I haven't seen yet the program for this. But last year he did. And then on Easter Sunday, he will preside at Mass in St. Peter's Square in the morning.
Right, and I imagine that we'll see a lot more on that message of the need for peace in the Pope's way of the cross reflections and also in his homilies this upcoming weekend and in his Urbi et Orbi. So we'll talk more about that after the break. We'll talk about Jerry's interview with Archbishop Paul Gallagher, the foreign minister of the Vatican, and the need for peace in really specific situations around the world. But first, let's have a message from our sponsors. Do you want to be a master preacher? If so, Aquinas Institute of Theology's Doctor of Ministry and Preaching program will help you become the kind of preacher the Church so desperately needs today. Grounded in the charism of the Order of Preachers, the Aquinas program is the only Catholic program of its kind in the United States, and its graduates hold leadership roles in preaching and teaching throughout the world. The Aquinas cohort model is designed to accommodate a full-time minister's busy schedule, including both in-person and virtual components, where students work together in a close-knit, supportive community. Applications are now being accepted for the 2024 cohort, which begins this summer. Visit ai.edu/dmin for more information. That's ai.edu/dmin. All right, Jerry, on to our next story. Archbishop Paul Gallagher, the Vatican's Secretary for Relations with States, essentially its foreign minister, recently attended the Munich Security Conference, which bills itself as the world's leading forum for debating the most pressing challenges to international security. You recently interviewed Archbishop Gallagher about the current state of international security. What did he have to say that was new?
Well, he said there was real anxiety among all the delegates, and they were quite very significant people from all over the world. He said there was a feeling, especially over two events, the war in Israel and Hamas in Gaza, and the Russia-Ukraine war. And he said there was a sensation that we're in a kind of a lose-lose situation, and we got to try and get out of it. I was quite struck by that expression, but apparently they put it in their report. And he said, there's no doubt about it, that it's a very different climate. He experienced a very different climate to the previous conferences he had been at.
So, Jerry, this interview you did with Archbishop Gallagher covered both the war in Gaza, the war in Ukraine, and the Vatican-China deal, among other topics. Let's start with what he had to say about Gaza. I know he addressed this question of whether what's happening there can be considered a genocide.
Yes, he said that it's not for the Holy See to determine what is a genocidal situation. He said there are international instruments and organizations which are disposed to address this question, and he feels sure that this will happen. But when he said, I personally feel that one cannot use the noun genocide, because that's a very definitive judgment. And he said it's a legal term, and so it has to be dealt in that court. But he said, when one sees what's happening, the 32,000 dead already, probably more, because he said, according to certain statistics, because there's a belief that the number could well be higher than the many injured. We know there's more than 70,000 injured, some of them having lost their limbs. He said, millions displaced. We know there's 1.5 million in the south of Gaza, which are really risking famine. And he said, when all this, he said, there are many who are characterizing this as genocidal. And he says, we've got to get beyond making judgments and we've got to try and work to stop it. Now, I interviewed him on the morning of the 25th of March, Monday morning, 10 o'clock in the Secretariat of State. That afternoon, Rome time, in the UN Security Council, they finally voted for an immediate ceasefire. The United States had hitherto used the veto three times to block calls for a ceasefire.
And I believe this time around, the United States was the only abstention from the vote.
Yes, it was 14 in favor and one abstention. But the abstention was very important because it meant the decision of the UN Security Council is now international law and binding on countries to accept. Of course, Israel immediately came out and said that they weren't going to abide by this. But we have to see what happens. It's a very significant moment, and I think perhaps some would see it as maybe the first step on the path to peace.
With you, he also addressed this question of defunding UNRWA. This is the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestine Refugees in the Near East. So UNRWA for short.
Yes. Israel came out and said there were members of UNRWA who participated in the October 7 attack, Hamas attack in southern Israel.
Right, which kicked off this conversation about the possibility of defunding UNRWA.
Israel has pushed for the defunding, because UNRWA is funded by governments, and the United States has come behind, and in fact the Congress has blocked funding for 1 year, and many other countries, including Britain, I think in Germany, several countries.
How about the Holy See? What do they feel about this?
When I asked Archbishop Gallagher, does the Holy See support the defunding of UNRWA? He said, no, absolutely not. He said that this is an essential, in fact, it's a lifeline operation to provide aid to the Palestinian refugees. And he said, moreover, we have now spoken to some of the governments who have defunded, encouraging them to rethink, in other words, to go back and fund UNRWA. Archbishop Gallagher, remember, he was some days ago, he was in Jordan, and he met the head of UNRWA there.
Yes, he did, yeah.
And so, but it's a very clear position of the Vatican. They are totally against this attempt to defund UNRWA, because they feel it's the lifeline for the Palestinian refugees.
So, Jerry, the Holy See is against defunding UNRWA. They want this to remain a lifeline. What do they want to happen next in this conflict and in resolving it?
They want the fighting to stop, the ceasefire, and then the peace process to establish two states. The Vatican has always supported this, and Gallagher said some years ago we were the only ones that were talking about it. But he said now many people have returned again to talk about it. And they believe this is the only way forward, and he calls for an international status for Jerusalem, because it is the capital for the three major religions.
Right. He says we're not weighing in on, you know, which state should own Jerusalem. Jerusalem is a special case where it needs to be available to be visited by members of the three major world religions. Jerry, we know that the Pope has also been following Ukraine and Russia closely, which presumably means that the Secretariat of State has also been doing so. What did Archbishop Gallagher have to say to you about Ukraine and Russia?
Well, the first question I asked him was, of course, this question about the white flag, when the Pope said he encouraged Ukraine to have the
courage of the white flag, right?
The courage of the white flag. And I said, was the Pope asking Ukraine to surrender? He said, absolutely not.
Repeating what we've heard from the Vatican several times now. Jerry, another thing that's been in the news lately is there were some reports, seemed like they were pretty easily debunked, that the Pope had confirmed a trip to Moscow. What did Gallagher have to say on this?
He said there's no invitation from Moscow to the Pope. But he said another thing about Russia. He said, we're encouraging Ukraine to negotiate, but Russia has to take the first step to create the conditions for negotiations, and it means to stop sending missiles, to stop the attacks. He says Russia has to do this first.
So in both cases, they want the shooting to stop, the bombing to stop, and then a negotiation for peace.
Yes, I think this is the first time I've heard it said so explicitly. So Russia says we want to negotiate, but it's not creating the conditions to negotiate.
Jerry, one part of this interview that was really interesting to me was the Archbishop's comments on the Vatican-China deal. So you asked him about, you know, it's going to be up for renewal again in October. And he talked about kind of where he wants to see it go.
He made clear to me that the Vatican thinks this agreement, while everybody here acknowledges it's not ideal, but he said it's useful.
And just for our listeners to recap, why is it the view that it's not ideal?
The question of bishops is important because when the agreement was signed in 2018 in September, there were more than 30 dioceses in mainland China without a bishop. Since then, in 6 years, they have recognized 6 bishops. So really, it's been about 1 a year, which is really a pretty meager result from an important agreement. But on the other hand, look, Cardinal Zuppi was accepted in Beijing on the question trying to see what can be done over the Russia-Ukraine conflict.
Right, and this is something that might not have happened before the Vatican-China deal.
I think this wouldn't have happened without a climate having been created. The Pope also, in his speeches, he's never criticized Beijing for his human rights treatment of the Uyghurs in China. He's only mentioned it once in a book.
I mean, and some have questioned whether this deal with China that has had such a meager result in terms of the appointment of bishops, which is what it actually covers, if it's worth, you know, the Pope kind of having his hands tied in terms of being able to criticize China publicly. Archbishop Gallagher also spoke to you about the Pope's upcoming trip to Asia and made a revelation about it.
Yes, he confirmed that, in fact, what I had picked up on the grapevine, that the visit to 4 countries in Asia, that's Indonesia, Singapore, Timor-Leste, and Papua New Guinea, will be at the beginning of September, not at the end of August. It was originally believed to be at the last 10 days of August. So now it seems it's going to be the beginning of September.
Was any reason given for the change?
No, I don't know. It must be planning details. But he confirmed, yes, that's his understanding too. And I said, well, is the Pope going to go to Vietnam? Because I'd heard on the grapevine also that there was now under consideration the actual visit to Vietnam. And he said, well, it could be.
Before we go, we want to touch on one more thing, which is the German synodal way. So the German bishop's synodal process, which is different from the worldwide synod on synodality, has received cautionary messages from Rome several times since it began in 2019. The Vatican has expressed concern about the Germans' recommendations in favor of ordaining women and revising doctrine on homosexuality, for example. Now, the Vatican had threatened to open a canonical procedure against the synodal way if they went forward with voting for a new committee. But last Friday, March 22nd, after a day-long meeting, which both groups said was positive, the two groups struck an accord saying that they're going to work together as the process continues and that they plan to meet again this summer. So it seems like we're seeing a thawing in those relations. And one very last note before we leave. After we recorded this episode on Wednesday, March 27th, Pope Francis released a letter to the Catholics of the Holy Land. I'll read you just the first few sentences. Dear brothers and sisters, for some time you have daily been in my thoughts and prayers. Now, on the eve of this Easter that for you is so overshadowed by the Passion, and as yet so little by the Resurrection, I feel the desire to write to you and tell you how close you are to my heart. It's a really beautiful letter. It calls again for the prayers of all Christians for peace in the Holy Land, and we have posted the full text of the letter at americamedia.org. I'll also link to it in the show notes. So Jerry, as we move into Holy Week, having all these global conflicts in mind that you spoke about with Archbishop Gallagher, I think it's clear that we'll all be praying for peace this Easter.
Absolutely. I think this will be the center of the Pope's message. Prayer for peace and call for peace and call for a stop to the killings. I'm looking forward to hearing what he says in the meditations on Good Friday. So I think we should wish all our listeners a very happy Triduum and happy Easter, and happy Easter to you, Colin.
Happy Easter to you too, Jerry, and we will be back in the Easter season with more for our listeners here on Inside the Vatican. Inside the Vatican is a production of America Media. This episode was produced by Maggie Van Dorn. Audio engineering by Kevin Christopher Robles. Our executive producer is Sebastian Gomes. To keep up with the latest news out of the Vatican, please follow us on Twitter at INSDE Vatican Pod. That's Inside Without the Second I, Vatican Pod. You can also follow me on X, formerly Twitter, and Instagram at Colleen Dulley. That's ColleenDulle. And you can follow Jerry on X at Jerry O'Rome. That's GerryOrome. Please consider becoming a digital subscriber to American Magazine. Just click on the link in our show notes. It's easy to do, and it's the best way to support our work here on Inside the Vatican. And if you have a little time to spare, please leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. For American Media with Gerard O'Connell, I'm your host and producer, Colleen Dully. We'll see you next time.
Have you ever wanted to dive deeper into Scripture? If so, you're in luck, because every day there's a new Scripture reflection from the thoughtful staff at America Media, thinking through big questions together, like, what do Catholics believe about guardian angels? And what can Gen Zers take away from the Gospels? If you're already a subscriber, you can access these reflections in your email inbox or on our website. If you'd like to become a digital subscriber, it's easy to do. Just visit americamagazine.org/subscribe, and you'll have full access to America's Scripture Reflections.